Welcome to the Old Tom Dragnet Show. This is your host, Adam Graham, coming to you from Boise, Idaho. I got some nice feedback. Tom Williams, who has supported the show in the past, emailed in the past, liked the idea where we did the double episode. I think that did work better, and hopefully we will continue to do those about once a quarter. I don't want to do it too much because then I'm overloading, and we're not doing the specialty that people enjoy. I did have one interesting conversation on email with Michael Hayde. We ended up on the same email list, and I asked him, how he found this, and how he found a lot of these TV episodes he describes, such as one episode he describes is The Big White Rat. Big White Rat is not available on any public collection anywhere, and he cited some places where that type of information was found, including going to the Museum of Radio and Television in New York, going to the Library of Commerce, the film section, and so he was able to get some of that watched there. So, if you're really into Dragnet, now you know what to do with your vacation. If you can sell it, certainly, by all means. All right. Well, let me go ahead. I want to, before we get too far into the show, and let you know a little bit about our sponsors. I've only got some nice comments to get to. Picture this. You're at home, ready to sit down for dinner. Suddenly, you remember the document you need to work on is on your office computer. Good news. With GoToMyPC, you don't need to make that trip back to the office. GoToMyPC, brought to you by Citrix, lets you easily access your office PC in just a few clicks. Setup takes just 2 minutes, and just like that, you're free to work from anywhere. GoToMyPC is easy to set up, easy to log on, and easy to use. Try GoToMyPC free for 30 days. For this special offer, you must visit www.gotomypc.com/podcast. That's gotomypc.com/podcast for your free trial. All right, well, we have got, like you wouldn't believe, we have got some comments on Podcast Alley. Great old show with interesting prologue and epilogue. Comfort food for the brain. Thanks so much, Darlin. And we definitely need some of that. I enjoy your podcast very much. Your commentary adds to the experience. I thought breaking things up with Jeff Regan was a good idea. Do you have any copies, or do you have access to Pete Kelly's Blues? It is yet another side of Jack Reb. I've read that Pete Kelly's Blues was grittier than other shows he did. Plot lines don't always wrap up on the upbeat. Do you know if Jack Reb had an interest in music? He was married to the great blues singer Julie London. He cast her and her second husband, trumpet player Bobby Troup, in featured roles on the show Emergency. Keep up the good work, Sherry. Jack Webb was a big fan of the blues, and beyond that, in terms of finding Pete Kelly's Blues, I've actually been able to listen to it, and I don't know, I think in some ways, it was in terms of being downbeat, it was about as downbeat as Jeff Regan, or not Jeff Regan, but Johnny Madero, Pat Novak for Hire, about the same. Though the first episode I listened to, I think it was somewhat shocking, probably perhaps for the time as well as anything else. I don't know if I'm going to do any Pete Kelly's Blues on the show, but I'll get into how you can find it in just a moment, because I got another question. Great show. Adam, I love the show. I've loved old-time radio ever since I was a kid listening to Amos and Andy and Lum and Abner cassettes on my Walkman, or forcing my parents to play them in the car on road trips. Since the wonderful world of the iPod has arrived, your show has quickly become one of my favorites. I listen every week and enjoy your insight and comments. I'm currently using back episodes to feed my addiction for more Dragnet than once a week, and I'm enjoying seeing how you've refined your hosting skills from old shows to new ones. Keep up the great work, Nate. P.S. I find your enthusiastic welcome back to be proof that you Enjoy what you do and enjoy listening. By the way, any idea where I could find Lum and Abner episodes? All right, great question there, and that goes along with the Pete Kelly's Blues question. When it comes to old-time radio, I'm all about free. If later on I get a old-time radio site to host the show, I probably won't be able to go into this, but I'm not going to go back and delete anything. The easiest way to find old-time radio shows, though, is you go ahead, you go to archive.org. It is a huge site. Perhaps, if you follow news, it's best known for the Internet Wayback Machine, where you can pull up websites going back years. If you go to the top of the site of archive.org, there is a search. There's a search site. And what you want to do is you want to scroll down. There are several options. There's the Wayback Machine, which is, and then there's moving images, so videos and things. And all this stuff is, for the most part, in the public domain. Then there are text. You can do a lot of great things there. A lot of public domain books. You can search at Project Gutenberg. But what we're looking for is the audio. And if you can get and just scroll down to radio programs, and you put in what exactly you're looking for. And Lum and Abner, you put that in, and you get several different options that come up. Actually, into several pages, the way that it has. The way that it comes up. Lum and Abner itself, they have got a very large number of download pages. And I'm going to include links to the search results for Lum and Abner in the show notes. But you can just go to archive.org and find them. If in the show notes site's dragnetradio.blogspot.com. And Pete Kelly's Blues, same thing. Any type of old time radio show you can find here for the most part, except some of the more rare collectors one off things. But I've had very little that I could not just find doing a search at archive.org. So I encourage people use archive.org. Search under audio as well. Sometimes it won't come up otherwise. But if you can't, then probably Google for most things. For some reason, I'm not finding Pete Kelly here. I'm going to pause recording here and figure out how to find Pete Kelly and then resume. All right, I figured it out. Whoever listed Pete Kelly's Blues on archive.org didn't believe in the apostrophe. So you basically, when you do your search for Pete Kelly's Blues, there's no apostrophe in Kelly's. So Pete, then Kelly's Blues. But we'll link that also in the show notes. Dragnetradio.blogspot.com. Without any further ado, we're going to get into today's episode, which is called The Big Waiter, here on the Old Time Dragnet program. So here we go.
The story you're about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Fatima Cigarettes, best of all king-size cigarettes, brings you Dragnet.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned a homicide detail. A 64-year-old shopkeeper is found murdered, beaten to death in the back room of his store. The body bears the marks of a savage attack. There's no trace of the killer. Your job? Get him.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Wednesday, February 19th. It was cloudy in Los Angeles. We were working a night watch out of homicide detail. My partner's Ben Romero. The boss is Thad Brown, chief of detectives. My name's Friday. We were on the way out from the office, and it was 10:56 p.m. when we got to 1016 South 12th Street, the Apex Men's Shop.
Yes, sir?
Friday and Romero, Central Homicide. ID card.
Oh, yeah, Sergeant. Been waiting for you. My partner's upstairs in the back talking to the victim's wife.
You answered the call, did you?
Yeah, that's right. Miles and Kiva, Unit 16R.
Who are you?
I'm Miles. Kiva's talking to Mrs. Wilford, victim's wife. She found the body.
What's that up above?
How's that?
Music up there somewhere. Sounds like a party.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a dance place. Takes a hole up the floor of the building. A Wonderland dance hall, I think that's it.
Mm-hmm. When was the body found, Miles? Do you know?
Well, the wife wasn't very definite about it. She told her she came in the shop here about 10 o'clock tonight. Place was wide open. Nobody behind the counter. Said she looked around a while. Finally found her husband's body in the storeroom back there. Nothing for a weak stomach. It's pretty brutal.
What else do you have to say?
Oh, not too much. She's pretty closed-mouthed. Probably the shock of finding her husband like that. I don't know.
You want to show us where he is, Miles?
Yeah, it's straight back this way. The victim's name is Joseph Wilford. Owner of the store, ran it himself. Wife says he's had the business here for 23 years. The typical men's shop, you see that?
Mm-hmm.
It's around the left. In here.
Okay, go ahead.
He used this for his storeroom, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. As far as we know, the body hasn't been touched.
Yeah, sure took a terrible beating. The elderly man, huh?
My wife said he was 64 last birthday. She couldn't think of any enemies he has. Anybody want to do this?
Where did he keep his cash? Did she tell you that?
No, cash register, I guess. Can't be sure till Leighton Prince gets here.
Yeah. Did you call the crime lab yet?
I'm waiting for you, fellas.
You want to call him now? Would you mind?
Oh, sure, sir.
Say, you might as well call the coroner while you're at it. Tell him there's no big rush.
Yeah, right.
Take a look around here, Joe. Looks like a tornado ripped through.
Yeah. Chair overturned. Clothes all over the floor.
Yeah.
Come here, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the body.
Yeah?
His arms tied behind his back.
Ordinary clothesline rope. What's that cloth knotted around his neck?
I don't know. Looks like it could be a woman's slip. Doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Whoever it was, they weren't taking any chances he'd live through it. The wounds on the head here, the neck, see?
Yeah. Looks like he was stamped on by boots, something like that. Maybe a narrow heel. Sure brutal.
It doesn't look too much like a robbery motive. Not from the beating he took, anyway, huh?
Yeah. Looks like he might have had a taste for art. All over the wall, you have pin-up girls, fancy calendar.
Yeah. Got the crime lab, Sergeant. On the way out.
Oh, thanks, Miles.
Notified Deputy Coroner. Anything else I can do for you?
Yeah, would you mind getting the wife down here, Ms. Wilford? We'd like to talk to her.
Sure, right away.
Thank you.
How's she feeling? Any hysterics?
No, she's pretty quiet. She went upstairs to rest. A couple of housekeeping rooms up there. Guess that's where she and her husband live.
Well, tell her if she doesn't feel too well, we could come up there and talk to her.
Right, sir.
What do you think?
I don't know. We'll see what the crime lab can come up with. We can start checking around the neighborhood after we talk to the wife.
Mm-hmm. Let me take a look here.
What's that there?
Looks funny. Not much place in a haberdashery for things like this, huh?
A woman's nightgown. Black lace, huh?
Mm-hmm. Tucked in a gift box. Is that a card there?
Yeah. See if we can read it without touching it.
Mm-hmm.
It says, to a beautiful girl, you've been away too long, hoping we'll never be parted again. Signed, Joseph Wilford.
Seems a little funny, huh?
Yeah, it does.
Maybe his wife's been on a trip. He's going to give it to her as a present.
When's the last time you gave your wife a black lace nightgown?
Mm-hmm. 11:05 p.m. Two officers who'd answered the call, Miles and Kiever, brought the victim's wife, Mrs. Agnes Wilford, downstairs, and Ben and I questioned her. She was a small, slight woman, dark hair, dark brown eyes, a sharp nose and chin. She looked to be in her early 50s. She said that both she and her husband had emigrated to America from northern Germany 25 years before. We asked her how her married life with Mr. Wilford had been, but she kept dodging the question. We asked her how she happened to find the body.
The body's just as you found it, Mrs. Wilford. You didn't disturb anything?
No, I just came back from a friend's and looked, and I saw him, and he was dead. Somebody killed Joseph.
You're pretty sure that your husband wasn't having any trouble with anybody? No enemies?
No, he didn't have any enemies not to do this.
Yes, ma'am. You lived upstairs in the back of the store with Mr. Wilford, is that right, ma'am?
It's for a long time, yes. We lived upstairs in the rooms. It was nice. Saved money for rent.
Well, do you have any idea at all why your husband's dead? Why somebody'd want to kill him?
There was money in the store. They'd kill for that. You're policemen. People kill for money, you know that.
Well, do you know where Mr. Wilford kept his money, ma'am?
There was a wooden drawer on the table in the back room. He would keep the money there. But I looked when I came in. First, it was empty.
Well, was there any money in that drawer tonight? Do you know that?
Oh, yes. $300-$400 anyway. Joseph always kept it in there. A terrible place up above. The music all the time, the noise. You should make them be quiet. The dance hall's been up there for a year tonight anyway. They should be quiet.
Yes, ma'am. About the money Mr. Wilford had in the store.
Maybe $1,000. $700-$800, maybe that anyway. And then his wristwatch he had on, that's gone, too.
Can you give us a description of the watch, Mrs. Wilford? What make it was, what it looked like?
Yes, I can give that to you. It's white gold, expensive. It's writing on the back. Agnes, Joseph. On birthday, I gave it to her.
Have you been away from your husband recently, ma'am? I mean, on a trip or anything like that?
No, I haven't been away. Why?
Well, we don't mean to upset you at a time like this, but would you know if your husband had any woman friends? Ms. Wilford?
If you have a cigarette, I'd like one.
Oh, yes, ma'am. Here you are.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your light, Miss.
Thank you. Do we have to talk about it?
I'm afraid so, ma'am.
Most of them I know. For 10 years it's been like this. There were many of them. Young women. Joseph didn't try to hide it from me. I knew all about it.
You continued to live with your husband all this time, ma'am?
I did. He'd bring the girls to the shop here sometimes. When they'd come, I'd go away for a while. After they were gone, I'd come back. Joseph and I would never talk about it.
You mean you never had any arguments with your husband about the women?
No. He never lied to me about the girls. He had them, that's all. It was something he expected me to understand.
I see. You say you knew several of these women your husband went out with. Could you give us their names, please?
Yes, there's an address book upstairs in Joseph's desk. The names are in there.
I see. Would you mind showing us that address book now, please?
Yes, we can go upstairs. I'll get it for you.
There's one question I'd like to ask you, Mrs. Wilford.
Yes?
If you don't mind.
Yes?
About your husband, ma'am.
I don't know. Hurt very much at first. And then by and by, it didn't hurt so much. Time, I guess. Habit.
Beg your pardon?
A habit. If you want to, you can get used to anything.
Yes, ma'am.
Even a man who doesn't love you anymore.
We went upstairs to the housekeeping rooms where Mrs. Wilford gave us her husband's personal address book. She also gave us a description of his wristwatch, which had been removed from the body, along with the name of the jeweler who'd sold her the watch. It was a Hamilton with a diamond-studded dial. The crime lab crew arrived downstairs and began their routine investigation. We finished questioning the victim's wife, and then we started checking the neighborhood. Only a few of the stores in the area were still open. We found only one possible witness, a newsboy, who told us that he'd seen an attractive dark-haired woman enter the store earlier in the night at about 8:30 p.m. His description of her was only sketchy. Another hour of checking the neighborhood, and we went back to the store. Lieutenant Lee Jones and the crime lab crew finished checking over the entire layout. They went back downtown to give a thorough examination to what physical evidence that they'd found. The deputy coroner arrived and removed the body. Together with Hubka and Forbes from Homicide, Ben and I spent most of the next day checking the store owners in the immediate neighborhood of Wilford's Haberdashery. They could tell us nothing we hadn't already found out. We got the description and serial numbers of the victim's missing wristwatch, notified the pawn shop detail, and got out a broadcast on it. 3:45 p.m., we checked with the office.
We got a slow enough start on this thing, huh? Everybody tells us the same story.
Yeah, seems to be pretty common knowledge. He had a lot of girlfriends. I guess we better start checking out the names of that address book.
Yeah. Sure beats all, doesn't it, Joe?
What's that?
Mrs. Wilford, 10 years, her husband's dating other women right in front of her. It isn't normal. Can't see why she didn't just pack up and leave.
Well, it's kind of hard to figure at that. Maybe she was still in love with him. Wonder how Forbes and Hubka made out.
I'll check the book, see if we got a call.
Yeah.
See. No?
No word from him, huh?
No, Lee Jones called from the crime lab, wants us to check with him. I'll call him.
Okay, fine.
2667, please. Okay.
Guess we better check with the morgue, too, huh? See if they got the body posted yet.
Yeah. Hi, Lady Romero. What was it? Did you get the name? I see. All right, bye.
Well, yeah.
Lee talked to the coroner already. Wilford died about 9 o'clock. Cause of death was strangulation.
Mm-hmm. How about those wounds on the head and on the neck?
That didn't do it. The cloth tied around his neck. It was a woman's slip, all right.
Yeah. Did he pick up anything off it? Any laundry marks?
He did better than that.
Yeah?
He got the name of the laundry.
After checking for all stains and markings on the woman's slip, which had been found knotted around the murder victim's neck, Lee Jones had examined it under a special fluorescent light. He found a type of marking used by only one large laundry service in the city. We checked with the managers of the laundry company and found that the slip had been cleaned by them for a Miss Elise Dressler. She had a North Hudson Street address. We started checking on her. The first lead came from the dead man's personal address book. We found the name of Elise Dressler listed along with her address and telephone number. There was a single word scribbled beside her name and enclosed with parentheses. It said Max. That was all. 5:42 p.m. We drove out to the address, a Spanish-style apartment house on North Hudson. We rang, but there was no answer. The apartment manager told us Miss Dressler worked as a dancer at a nightclub on West 7th Street. Ben and I drove to the club, a high-priced theater restaurant, which was newly opened. We were told Elise Dressler wasn't due there until 9 p.m. We had a couple of ham and cheese sandwiches and some coffee at a lunch counter, and we checked back at the club a few minutes past 9. The show was already started. We located the Dressler girl in the room backstage. She was a tall, fairly attractive blonde. We started questioning her.
Can you tell us where you were last night, miss?
Yeah, all right. Here, I work every night but Monday. We closed then.
What time did you get here last night?
Just about 8 o'clock. I had something to eat, and then I changed my costume and went to work.
Do you know if Mr. Wilford had any enemies?
No.
Maybe somebody was having trouble with?
No, maybe that wife of his. It's none of my business. I wouldn't know.
You can't think of anybody at all that might want him out of the way?
No, I don't think so. He and Max Hollins had some arguments, but that's the only time I saw Joe mad at anybody.
Who's this Max Hollins?
He's the man who arranged for me to come out from New York. Joe and Max have been friends for a long time.
What were the arguments about, Miss Dressler? Do you remember?
Yeah, about me. You see, Max brought me out here, and I suppose at first he thought he owned me. He didn't think I should go out with any other men but him. Max is stubborn sometimes. Well, so am I. I like Wilford, so I went out with him. I went out with Max, too.
Well, these arguments they had about you, would you say that they were pretty mad at each other, Max and this Mr. Wilford?
Only last week, Max was very angry with Joe, but I think he got over it. Could we talk together later? It's almost time for me to go on. I'll be get outside.
Oh, sure. Excuse me.
Yeah, I'll get it.
We'll wait backstage here for you, Miss Dressler. Is that all right?
Yeah, fine. Oh, that's all right. I still have a few minutes.
Well, how about the last time you were in Wilford's store, Miss Dressler? Can you remember that?
Not exactly. At least 6 months ago. I hardly ever went to see Joe there.
Did you ever have any occasion to leave any clothing with Wilford in his store, maybe for a cleaning operation?
No, I never left them. Maybe it's possible they could be there.
How do you mean?
Well, I had some nice slips, you know. First, I sent them out, but Joe said he knew a very nice French laundry to do them. He'd come to my place, pick them up, and then take them to the laundry. Maybe he could have left them in his shop one day.
Well, would anybody besides yourself have access to the clothes in your apartment? Maybe a roommate?
No, I live by myself. I have the only key to the door except Max Hollins. He's got one. He lives in my apartment house, the upstairs floor. Nobody else has a key.
Did you send any clothing to the French laundry with Mr. Wilford recently?
Yes, sir, I did. Two nice sets of mine. But Joe Wilford didn't call for him. I sent him over to Max.
How'd that happen?
Max said he might as well take them. He was going down to that neighborhood by the haberdasher.
Oh.
I wanted to see Wilford anyway. Max said he wanted to fix up their argument.
We continued questioning the Dressler girl after she finished her first act at the theater restaurant. She told us that she hadn't seen Max Hollins since early the day before. She was taken downtown where she gave us a full statement. Further questioning got us the information that the argument between the two men, Joseph Wilford and Max Hollins, over the affections of Elise Dressler was far from settled at their last meeting. The girl admitted that it was a serious argument and that it ended up in a fistfight between the two men. She said Max Hollins was out of town for the night, but that he'd return early the next evening for work. He was employed as manager of a room service department at a large downtown hotel. 11:30 p.m., Ben and I drove back to the apartment house on North Hudson, and together with the building manager, we checked Max Hollins' apartment. We found nothing. The manager told us Hollins' car was parked in the apartment garage, so we went down and gave it a routine check. Under the front seat, we found a paper bag with a pair of gloves in it. There were bloodstains on both gloves. We dropped them off at the crime lab for examination. At 6 o'clock the following night, Ben and I went to the room service department of the downtown hotel where Hollins was employed.
Sorry, sir, Mr. Hollins is late this evening. He should be here pretty soon.
He notified you he'd be in late?
Well, he called, yes. Probably be here in 10 or 15 minutes. And his assistant, can I help you?
No, it's all right. We'll wait.
All right.
Pardon me. I wonder if we could look at your wristwatch, please.
Well, surely. It's just a few minutes past.
No, we just want to look at the watch if we could.
Oh, sure. Here.
Could you take it off? I'd like to look at the back of it, if it's all right.
Sure, that's all right. Here. That's looking, isn't it? Just got it yesterday.
That's all.
Same engraving. Agnes to Joseph.
Where'd you get this watch, sir?
Well, what's the matter?
Where'd you get it?
Max Hollins. He sold it to me.
You are listening to Dragnet, actual stories from official police files.
February 21st, Friday, 6:30 p.m. We called the office and notified them that we'd located the wristwatch taken from the body of the murder victim, Joseph Wilfred. A stakeout was placed on the North Hudson Street apartment house. Ben and I stayed on at the hotel waiting the return of the murder suspect, Max Hollins. We talked to his assistant and found out that Hollins had a room in the hotel where he could sleep whenever he was called on to work late at night. 6:55 p.m. We called the office back and asked for a couple of men to be sent over to check the suspect's room. A few minutes later, Hollins himself showed up for work. Apparently, he'd been doing some drinking. Ben and I questioned him at his desk and stalled for time until the men from the office could get to the hotel and make a thorough check of the suspect's room. Hollins was kept busy on the phone taking room service orders from the hotel guests. In between calls, we talked to him.
I left Elise in the apartment, and then I took the few pieces of laundry she had and dropped them off at Wilfred's store. It was about 6 o'clock Wednesday night.
You mentioned the address of the girl you wanted to see, Mr. Wilfred. You wanted to patch up an argument you'd had with him?
Yes, I just wanted to make sure he didn't have any bad feelings about it. Really wasn't much of an argument.
How long did you stay at Wilfred's store, Mr. Hollins? Do you remember that?
20 minutes, maybe a half hour. We talked, and we had a glass of wine in the back room. No, it was upstairs. We drank the wine, and everything was all right. I guess it was about 6:30 when I left the store. It was all right then.
Well, did anybody come in the store while you were there?
No, there was nobody.
How about Mrs. Wilfred? Was she in the store at all during the time you were there on Wednesday?
No, he said she was gone for the day. She'd be back later on. We finished our talk, then I left. It was the last time I saw Joseph. It was a terrible thing, somebody to kill him. Excuse me again, please.
Yes, sir. All right.
Room service, may I help you, please?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Well, could I suggest the Palace Court salad?
Very nice, yes. Parts of artichokes filled with fresh crab meat. A Thousand Island dressing garnished with slices of avocado.
All right, sir. Two orders.
Some consomme?
All right.
French rolls, coffee, and brandy.
8:13.
Yes, sir, right away. Fred, this order for 8:13.
Yes, Mr. Hollins.
That's Mr. and Mrs. Morrow, 8:13. Make it quickly, please.
Yes.
One of the best men I have, Fred. We keep a very high standard in our room service. Only the very best. They're all Geneva men.
Yes, sir. Something else we'd like to find out.
21 years ago, I came here to the hotel. There's nothing. They were serving garbage, bad service, very bad. I built our staff one by one. I did it. There's our staff list there. Finest ladies in the country. Henry Sanchez, Fred LaSalle, Conrad Lutz, Joe Zwick.
Yes, sir.
And Elmer Creighton. He waited on the president when he came to visit here from Washington. The president thought so much of our service, he wrote a letter to Elmer later on. No argument at all. I had the best spin in the country, the best food. 21 years to make it like it is. I did it all myself.
I understand you and Wilfred were old friends, Mr. Hollins. You knew him quite a number of years, is that right?
Most of his life, yes. I knew Joseph in the old country. We came from the same town. Terrible thing that's happened. I always liked Joseph, a good friend.
What about these arguments you had with him lately about the girl, Elise Bresner? Did they amount to anything?
No, but it showed something typical of Joseph. Maybe it was the business he was in, dollars. All he thought about, the big dollar. He knew he had more money than I did. He thought he could do anything with it.
How do you mean?
About the girl, Elise. I took a visit to the old country 3 years ago, Strasbourg. That's where I learned my trade from the best maitre d's in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
I met Elise on my way back in New York. You can check up on all my background. I worked at the Grand Hotel in Brussels. That's when it was the best. I was at the Carlton in London. Then I went to Venice, the Hotel Danieli. After, I went to the Hotel Majestic in Cannes.
Yes, sir. What would that have to do with Miss Bresner?
Very nice girl. We liked each other. When I came back here, I arranged for her to come out from New York. Took care of everything. I thought I'd like to marry her when she came here.
How about it, Hollins? You want to tell us now?
Sir?
Did you kill Wilfred?
Excuse me, please.
Room service, may I help you, please?
Yes, Mr. Sutter. Dinner for 12 tomorrow night in your suite. Your wife and I made up the menu.
Certainly, Mr. Sutter. I'll check it over for you. Let's see. We serve caviar with blini to start with, then the soup, consomme, madeleine, and with the soup, amontillado.
Yes, sir, that's Spanish.
Then crab legs, Saint-Denis.
Sir?
Saint-Denis, that's crab legs rolled in breadcrumbs, fried in butter, served in a terrapin dish with bechamel sauce.
After that, the Chateaubriand with truffle sauce, souffle potatoes, small green peas francais. And with that, we serve Ponte Cornet 27. Dessert, we shall have peach flambé, coffee, and liqueurs afterwards. Yes, sir. Denny Sanchez and Conrad Luce. They will serve you. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Sutter. Good night.
Real gentleman, Mr. Sutter. He knows how to give a dinner party. The old school. Not so many of them left now. Not like it used to be. People aren't the same anymore. Oh, yes, Fred. What is it?
A message for the officers here, Sergeant.
Oh, thank you. Excuse us for a minute.
Oh, of course.
What is it?
It's from Forbes. I checked his room in the hotel. I didn't find anything.
But he came downtown, huh?
Yeah. Hollins will have to ask you to come downtown.
Oh, yes. Get my top coat on here. And there. Yeah. Out this way, Sergeant.
All right.
You park your car in the hotel garage?
No, sir. Outside on 10th Street.
You go out the side door, then. This way. It's starting to rain. You both have your top coats?
Yeah. Well, let's go. We're parked right down this way.
What did Elise say? Elise Dressler.
She said you had a fight with Wilford. You went to see him the same day he was murdered.
Yes. It's terrible. It's too bad.
Might as well tell you, sir. We've got the evidence. Quite a bit of it. All points to you.
Oh? How is that?
Well, the pair of gloves you were wearing, we found them. The wristwatch you took off the body, we found that, too.
Yeah.
You want to tell us about it?
I didn't use good sense. I didn't know what to do when I went to see him. But I didn't have it in my mind to kill him. God knows I tried to talk to him. I asked him, please, to stay away from Elise. I asked him as a friend.
Yes.
All he said to me was, next, I give her presents and she likes me. I have the money to give her what she wants next. You haven't got the money. That's what he said to me.
You had a fight with him then?
No, there wasn't any fight. I'm not sorry. I killed him, but I'm not sorry.
You want to give us a statement about it downtown?
I suppose. I'm not ashamed of it.
All right, let's go. Down this way.
Any man would have done the same. How could you hear such talk and not kill him?
How about the wristwatch you took off of him, the money from the drawer?
I wanted to hurt him more, even after he was dead, after I beat him and beat him. I knew it would be the worst way to hurt Joseph, to take his money.
Here we are. In the back, huh?
Yeah. Sergeant.
Yeah.
I've told you now. I killed him. Don't you think I had a right to kill him?
I wouldn't know.
But he was like that. The first time you met Joseph, you would know he was bad. It was better for everybody for him to die. First time you met him, you would know that.
I'm sorry, I wouldn't know, mister.
What?
The only time I met him, he was dead.
The story you have just heard was true. The names were changed to protect the innocent.
On June 4th, trial was held in Superior Court, Department 89, City and County of Los Angeles, State of California. In a moment, the results of that trial. Max Hollins was tried and convicted of murder in the first degree. He was executed in the lethal gas chamber at the state penitentiary, San Quentin, California. You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department.
Fatima Cigarettes, best of all king-size cigarettes, has brought you Dragnet, transcribed from Los Angeles.
Stay tuned for Counter Spy, next on NBC.
Welcome back. Well, this is one of the episodes, I guess you could call it your garden variety killers. The person who is not the professional killer would not have done the stupid stunt about selling the watch. Whatever he sold the watch for, it certainly wasn't worth getting executed over, which in this case happened to the waiter. He attempts to justify the particular the particular crime. Remorse, I think we have a lot more sympathy with. The justification coming from the guy who who's not just totally hardened. Those people can be somewhat scary, but the coming from the guy who's not totally hardened almost comes off as, I don't know, almost pathetic in the justification for committing the crime of murder. And this episode, the one thing I think you catch here is police officers in the modern era are portrayed as just kind of, when it comes to whatever it is that people do, no matter how outrageous, it's just kind of like, oh, whatever. Definitely not that case in the 1950s, where I think there's an undercurrent to the show of just still the capability of being shocked, which in today's world you don't, you know, when it comes to TV cops, there's a certain attitude of, well, we've seen it all. That basically kind of goes with a lot of the TV cops. Anything you tell them, oh, well, you know, you might get a joke, but not any real kind of, like, wow, shock. So I think that, I think it does say something about the differentness of the early 1950s in that particular regard. All right, well, that's it for this episode. We will be back next week with another episode of the Old Time Dragnet program. If you got any comments, please feel free to contact me, adam@adamsweb.us. Also, please cast your vote for us at podcastalley.com. Just put Dragnet in the search bar and cast your vote. Again, I do want to thank everyone so much for listening. For now, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.